very well, my honey. Fare you well, my only true one. All the birds that were singing are flown, except you alone. Gonna leave this broke down palace on my hands and my knees. I will roll, 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 make myself a bed by the waterside. In my time, in my time, I will roll, roll, roll. In a bed, in a bed by the waterside, I will lay my head, listen to the river sing sweet songs to rock my soul. The river gonna take me, sing me sweet and sleepy. Sing me sweet and sleepy all the way back home. It's a far gone lullaby song many years ago. Oh mama, mama, many worlds have come since I first left home. Growing home, growing.
Hi, it's Chuck from Above the Basement, Boston Music and Conversation. Massachusetts native Mark Arely is a singer-songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, and producer, and has been in the Boston music scene as a professional for almost 20 years. He just released Mixtape, a compilation of covers from musicians who inspire him. We had a great conversation covering his high school bands, the link between science and music, his move from entomology to full-time musician, his thoughts on collaboration in the writing process, and also the importance of reading instructions on smoke machine use. Before we begin, I want to tell you about the ATB Street Teamer Project. We need to garner more attention to Above the Basement, and one of the keys to that is reaching those people who have not been introduced to our podcast. By becoming a street teamer, you are joining a unique community of people who love music and the people behind it. To learn more about it, go to abovethebasement.com/street-team. So here is our conversation with Mark Arely, recorded at Woods Hill Table in Concord, Massachusetts. I met you briefly at, I think it was Sub Rosa. So I met you that night. I mean, it was in a crowded, I mean, it was a crazy night because you were about to go on.
Is that the Lizard Lounge?
Or? Yeah, Lizard Lounge. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha. Oh man, I didn't connect this with that.
That was a great night. What was the theme, Chuck?
It was like an anthem something.
Yeah,
like,
I think you did like an Abraham Lincoln
Yeah, I did Abraham that night. Yeah, okay.
Abraham, right. Yep. It was a beautiful tune.
One of mine. Yeah, thanks.
And
yeah.
Remember the kid that they brought, the stranger, the dude that played...
Oh,
electric guitar.
Yeah.
So we've,
I love that
we've
show.
Talked to a whole bunch of people from that night. Alistair.
Cool. Yeah, Alistair's there. Yeah.
Chris Delmhorst. Rose Polanzani was my co-host that day when I talked to Chris Delmhorst.
Oh, that's
we did
great.
That. I mean, I met Zach.
Well,
yeah.
Jennifer.
Briefly.
Jennifer Kimball.
We had already
she was there
to.
That night.
But. She was there that night. But yeah, we're going through one by one.
All
we're
right.
Going through
the whole community.
Yeah, the whole Sub Rosa community.
Well, the whole, I mean, Sub Rosa community, that is a big part of the scene.
You know who like really sings the Mark Arely praises? We had a good time talking with David Wax Museum.
Oh, yeah.
And so Suze...
Slezak.
Yeah, Slezak. She was great. They were both great. She was really moved by her music and just loved the Mark Arely thing.
I love those guys.
You know, now I always assume now whenever we talk to somebody, especially someone who plays in the Boston area, that I'm going to say, oh, we just talked to so-and-so. You must know them.
Right.
And maybe 85 to 90% of the time. Yeah, of course I know them.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've mentioned you to a couple people and they've known you and now you know David Wax.
Yeah, so. Man.
But no one knows you through music though. It's weird. It's just like a high school.
Oh, yeah. That guy, he was an entomologist. Yeah.
That's
but you
right.
were, but you were
was, yeah.
close.
Close, yeah, yeah.
Did you work with insects?
I did, yeah. I got a degree in organismic and evolutionary biology.
So when you got your master's, did you have like kind of a thesis in a certain type of animal?
Yeah.
That you had? What was your animal?
I studied gypsy moth population dynamics.
Nice.
Yeah.
Gypsy moth.
People around here will remember, you know, at times it's been pretty intense.
Yeah.
At the
you
time
can see
I
the
was.
Trees with all the scars on them still.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
It's a lyric right there, Chuck.
Exactly.
Trees with scars, yes.
Yeah. But the time I did my master's, the populations were kept in check by a lot of virus and fungus and parasitic wasps and flies. So I had to create populations to study. I had to go down to Otis Air Force Base on the Cape and go out into the woods. I had to collect eggs from Michigan where they had outbreaks. And then I had to take
gypsy moth eggs in Michigan.
Yep, and then drive them back here and then staple them out on the trees on the military base where nobody cared.
But I mean, that's the kind of thing you can get arrested for. You can't even bring firewood to another state.
Well, they have an insect research facility there on the Air Force Base.
Wow. And so you got your data from that Air Force Base.
Yeah, yeah. I did my field research down there and I went to UMass Amherst. Feels like a former life because, you know, it basically was 98. 96 to 98, so that was 20 years ago now. I hate even saying that.
But. Yeah, I say that a lot more often than I used to.
You know, it's interesting, though, because, you know, we're going to dive into some music eventually. You know, you wonder if the meticulous aspect of songwriting and producing, and is there some element of a scientific evolution of a song?
Yeah, I know what you're asking. And I think more generally, what you're speaking to is that there's this perceived difference between science and art. Art is very touchy-feely and kind of, you know, comes from out of the ether and inspiration and the muse and all that. And science is very cold, black and white. If you do A, then you get B, and you ask this question and then you answer it, you know? And in reality, science is really not like that.
Yeah, it's not finite.
No, and in fact, they're both very creative endeavors and they both require a lot of hard work and persistence and
creativity.
Yeah, and just thinking outside of the box and really kind of trying to approach a problem from a novel perspective. That's what you're trying to do every time you write a love song, because we don't need more love songs. You know, we've got plenty great ones, but if you can find a way to think outside the box and chip away at it and really, you know, come at it from a somewhat novel perspective, then the skills you use to do that are the same that you use to, you know, devise and run an experiment. I've never felt like it was that different. That said, nobody claps when you finish the experiment. And you know,
especially if you infest the whole entire countryside with gypsy moths.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that was what I did right after college, and I was really torn for a long time. Mm. Biology versus music. Biology was the logical, solid choice on the surface. But I just had this drive and this love of music and wanted to do it. And I just thought, you know, if I don't try it, I'm going to be this bitter old man wondering what if. So I'm trying it. I'm in my 19th year of trying.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
Yeah. You know, pretty good job trying.
I was looking at your website and you have this amazing video. Must be your high school band.
Yes.
Which is phenomenal. I don't use that word very often because I used to use it way too often.
Yeah.
But I'm going to bring it back.
Okay. It's a sparing use of the word.
I had a band in high school called Tequila and the Worms.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
It's a good band name. And we were okay. You know, we held our own. But it was a very seminal moment for me having a band like that. And we playing in front of my peers, senior in high school then. Mm-hmm. And I knew that when I got to college, I would start a band. I knew, like, I want to continue this. Watching that video, you're so lucky to have that video.
It's amazing that I was able to track it down. That band, I believe, was Dead Flowers.
Dead Flowers, not bad.
I was like, cool, you named it after, like, a Stone song. That's awesome. They're like, no, it's not after the Stone song. And I was like, so it's just after flowers that have died? Like, that's not as cool a story, guys. Like, you're going to, because I joined out, you know, it came in after they had already formed.
I have this awesome picture of us on stage, but no video. I mean, this is a little bit before. I mean,
they
you're
have video
43,
then?
44?
43, yeah.
So I'm almost 50, but
they had Betamax?
It's a little before
what
that.
What did they have when you were a kid?
There was VCR there. Yeah.
Oh, maybe there was.
Yeah, sure there was. But not, they had like different angles and they had like the audience shots.
Oh, yeah. That was Reading Cable. This was in Reading, Massachusetts. And
the local cable show.
They had the cable access station. It's funny, the way that I got that footage is Basement Days came out on Little Vigils, which was 2010. So I guess it was eight years ago now. God, I keep having that experience.
I do too. Me too.
Yeah. So I was there. to do an interview. There was a kid there that was in high school at the time and had to do a project. And I said, yeah, I'll come in and drop my kid off at my folks' place. They still live in Reading. And I went to do the interview, and we did it. And then afterwards, he said, you know, we still have all that footage of your early band.
So you hadn't even seen it since high school?
I hadn't. No, I didn't have a copy of it. And he goes, yeah, you know, we still have that footage. And I said, you got to give it to me. I'm going to make a video with that. I had a blast. I don't think too many people saw that video, so I'm really glad to hear you single it out. But for me, that was an incredibly meaningful project.
It is meaningful because it was had such an effect on me being on that stage for the Battle of the Band. That's the picture is from. Mm-hmm. And you being able to take that video and put it to a song that you wrote.
Oh, so
about
years,
that.
20
yeah,
years
yeah.
later.
About it. So yeah. was that? So what was the song?
So the song is called Basement Days.
Timmy played bass and his brother had a Mexican strap. I was on drums and couldn't find the one, but I only sang a little flat. Fake wood paneling, linoleum floor, pillow stuffed under the upstairs door. Trying to learn a few chords and start a band. Take me back to those basement days, stairway to heaven and purple haze. Pinball wizard and born to grind. I can't get no satisfaction. We were lost in the music down in that room. It might as well have been the dark side of the moon. You can burn out or fade away, but you can't get back to those basement days.
You guys look legit.
Was it all covers or was it?
It was mostly covers, mostly classic rock kind of stuff. I guess the last couple of years of high school, I went from Dead Flowers to Organic Ice Cube, and we were all original.
Excellent.
And, that's fantastic.
But you were a drummer in Dead Flowers.
I was a
in the video at least.
I was a drummer in Dead Flowers.
Oh, really?
One of two, because they didn't.
That's right. You had two drummers in the video.
They didn't want a lead singer prancing around. They were serious musicians, and they, you know, right. You're gonna have to play an instrument if you're in the band. I was like, well, I can play half of the drums, you know. So I played. And we were big Allman Brothers and Grateful Dead fans. So the story behind that Basement Days song is pretty amazing, because there was a handful of bands, three or four bands, and the band of the upperclassmen had organized this local event, this benefit for AIDS research, and it was four of the bands, and the organizers were going last, and Organic Ice Cube, we were the penultimate band, and you know, we were damned if we were going to let the headliners, you know, have all the glory. So we were trying to think of ways we could make an impact. So we went to Daddy's Chunky Music.
I remember Daddy's.
Yeah, and rented a smoke machine. And we thought, like, we'll close the curtains to the stage, and we'll have the smoke machine billowing, you know, pumping out. And then when we hit our downbeat, we'll pull the curtains, and, you know, the smoke will waft out over the audience, and we'll
Stonehenge.
Yeah, exactly. It was a total Spinal Tap thing. Complete Spinal Tap. The first red flag should have been when the guy at the music store said, you know, and this will not set off the fire alarm. You know, that hadn't even occurred to us. We were like focused on rock and roll infamy. We didn't care about fire alarms. So we did the thing. We had the curtain closed. You know, we had it pumping really good. And then we hit our downbeat and the curtains pulled open. And what we had neglected to account for is the fact that that smoke doesn't really go anywhere without a fan to blow it. So
you know, no one could see
the curtain pulls back to reveal an almost an impenetrable wall of smoke. There's a rock band in there somewhere, but the audience can't see it.
Yeah.
We can't see the audience. We can barely see each other. I'm like flailing away on the drums. We're just going for it.
Oh, that's funny.
And then we don't even realize that there's a problem until I literally see the firefighters come out of the smoke, hands on my shoulder,
really?
Unplug the amps. Like they shut the whole thing down because we had set the fire alarm off. We were playing so loud we couldn't even hear it.
Oh, really? That's rock and roll, baby.
It was pretty rock and roll.
That's rock and roll.
It's basically been all downhill from there. That was.
It makes for a great story.
Yeah, and it's the kind of the thing that, you know, I appreciate the technology and the advances in, you know, being able to record yourself and stuff like that for like kids coming up today, being able to figure that stuff out on their own. But there was a real thing to just having to be in a room together. And, you know, you couldn't just, it wasn't really that easy to layer tracks on top of each other and just say, well, I'll play the drums and then I'll play the bass. You know, you had to get a guy that played drums. You had to get another friend that played the bass, and you had to all be there together. I thank God that I had that experience, because I can sit down in my basement and build a certain kind of track with Pro Tools and the instruments that I have at hand. But that love of just getting people, musicians in a room and working with each other to create something, that's where it came from. It came from those basement jams, you know, when I was a kid. Thank God, because it really created friendships that, you know, last my whole life.
I saw an interview with you, and it resonated with me too, because we're all similar age, and you talked about the midlife element of songwriting. We're young enough that we kind of get it, what's going on in the younger brain going through music, but we're old enough that you can see as an adult what happens next. Next chapter.
You're young enough that it wasn't so long ago that you don't remember how it was and how it felt, but you're old enough to realize that it doesn't last forever, you know, like it used to seem that it would.
I haven't heard someone put it that way, with a midlife crisis turned midlife question. Yeah, there's a negative that can occur, but then there's a positive, and there's, what do you do with that information? The fact that you can't stop time. And what does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, I look at it as an incredible opportunity, because I'm so much better at what I do than I've ever been. I know so much more about what I like to do and how I like to approach it. And I'm always learning and always hungry to find, you know, new ways to kind of get further in there. But I still remember what it felt like to just kind of plug in and thrash away. Try and not forget that part of it, because it can be too easy to get inside of it and get down about, you know, the state of the music industry or how your career is now versus how it used to be. And it's really important to me to still have the joy of making music be a part of, you know, what has become my job. And part of that for me is like the sideman work that I do. I think if I had just stayed as like the lonely folk singer playing in church coffee houses and, you know, little roadhouses across the country, I don't think I would have lasted in that specific role. The sideman thing really saved me from myself and helped me reconnect with that joy of being in the basement. So I feel very grateful that it's come to this halfway point, and hopefully halfway, and realize that, you know, like, I need all that stuff. I need the electric guitar in someone else's band playing their songs and, you know, traveling in their van or bus or whatever it may be. And I need those nights where I'm just playing my own songs and, you know, saying what I have to say.
Well, you can see it in a lot of your albums where you'll have duets, or it's written with Jeffrey Foucault, or, you know, with, I think Chris Delmhorst has also been on your, I mean, that's a list of who's who, like, of people that we've talked to and know in Boston. So you've continued, not only have you done the sideman stuff and your own solo stuff, but you're constantly working with other people.
Yeah, I mean, there's the whole no man being an island thing. You know, I think early on there was a drive for me to show that I could do it. And so I would try and do, you know, all the writing at least, you know, and even with the arrangements, like I would try and come up with the arrangements and the progressions and stuff. But as I got older, I started to realize, like, oh, well, there's all these other people with other perspectives to offer. And, you know, if we were in Nashville, it would have happened much earlier. The co-writing thing is just so much more of a thing down there. Up here in New England, it's that Yankee kind of stolidity, do it yourself, I'm self-sufficient, you know.
Is that more so the case?
I really feel like that's something to fight against in art up here, that, like, you don't have to do it all by yourself and be that self-sufficient Yankee. You can reach out for your friends and, you know, try and involve your community in what you're trying to do. And so I feel like once I kind of eased up on those self-imposed constraints, which I didn't even really know I was doing, you know, like a song like French King that I wrote with Jeffrey Foucault, I wrote 80% of that song, but he wrote the 20% that made it really great, you know? And I knew that when I finished my take on it, I was like, this is like an A minus. This is pretty good, but I feel like there's an A song in here, you know? And Jeff was the one that mostly just pared stuff away and helped me really crystallize what it was that I was trying to say. You know, and I wouldn't have ever gotten there without him. So it was a real honor it was a no-brainer to give credit when someone contributes like that. And that happens time and again, whether it's the writing of a song or in the studio trying to create a track that really moves people, both singing voices and instrumental voices that you just know that you got to bring into the mix. I love that stuff. I driving home on the Mohawk Trail last night. My mind nameless as the dry leaves in my headlight. When I saw a state trooper running out on the French King Bridge, flashlights sweeping the darkness over the edge.
So Mix, you made me think of Mixtape.
Ah,
which nice segue. It was just out.
Yeah, it's not usually that good.
Yeah.
You just came out, I think, 2 days ago.
2 days ago.
Right?
Yeah.
And you have some pretty interesting covers on it.
He covers one of our former guests.
Is it all covers?
It is all covers, yeah.
Okay, because some of them I didn't recognize. Definitely some of them I did.
Yep.
I really liked the Against All Odds, too.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
And how did you choose it?
Well, I mean...
He says, oh, God, for a reason. We'll get to that.
To kind of pull back for a second. So for the last 14 years, I've done this annual cover show at Passim.
Under the Covers?
Under the Covers, yeah. We didn't name it. It was named by someone else, and then it started to get, you know, it's successful stuck. And we couldn't change it. But yeah, so I've done this now we did our 14th year. The first 10 years were largely myself, Jake Armerding, and Lori McKenna. Mm-hmm. Towards the tail end of that first decade, we brought in our friend Zach Hickman, who first just played bass. And then I think the next year we let him sing a song. As the years went by, I was like, he's really full on, like, part of this. Like, we should just let him sing, you know? So
he sang a song at the piano at Sub Rosa.
Yeah. So
was that Zach?
That's Zach.
Wait, he's a dude on the piano.
With the mustache.
Yeah, bass and piano.
It was really interesting.
He's like, a bass player, but
he sang a song that night about his dad, I think.
Yeah. Wasn't it talked about his father.
A song about a relationship with him and his dad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it was really good.
Yeah.
Sorry, go
Zach,
ahead.
Zach's amazing.
We digress. So, but
the first decade was us four, and then at the 10-year mark, Lori decided that it was too much work at the holidays, and she wanted to let it go. So we brought Rose Cousins on to replace Lori. And so it's been Rose, Jake, myself, and Zach now for the last 4 years. Those shows are the organizing principle of my year. Every year after coming off stage from the cover show, I think, next year I want to do this song.
What's the criteria? Is it whatever you want to do? Favorites of yours?
There's no rubric. We've done everything from, you know, Sir Mix-a-Lot to Star Wars to
it's a thing
it's
that,
all of it.
What's great about it is that Dead did this. Some of the best bands in history were the ones that took other people's tunes and they made them their own, and it's brilliant because it just sounds like the band that you're in.
Absolutely.
And there is something about a tribute band that's amazing. You know, like those bands like Floyd
Journey
Journey and stuff. Yeah. And their job is to sound exactly like even the gear and everything. It sounds great.
Right.
I love that. But when you're in the middle and you're like trying to do songs the same way they do, if you're at a bar band, it's okay. But I love that different interpretation on tunes.
That's been my particular philosophy for the annual show. And, you know, people respond really great to it. They're not sure what the song is, maybe in the first couple chords or the first couple lines. But
it's
then
dawn
when
on them.
The tempo or even the time signature is different.
Yeah, oh, yeah,
which
yeah.
Which I love.
You know, you got to find your own way into the song, you know. I've always wanted to capture those cover shows somehow. And the live record seemed a little daunting. And so I thought, well, maybe someday I'll do a covers record and we'll pick songs that we've done at the cover shows over the years. And that's basically what we did. And it was mainly Zach Hickman's prodding that led me to do it at this point. He had some ideas about what cover songs he wanted me to do, including that Phil Collins song. And
good for you, because he gets so much crap. I've been a huge Genesis and Phil Collins fan my whole life. And
it's a recurring theme on this podcast.
I bought that tune the other day, your tune.
Oh, no way.
And I sent it to Leland Sklar, who
is
the bass player, you know,
he plays
for
Phil
Collins. Yeah.
Yeah.
I said, please send this to Phil.
So I'm going to blow your mind right now, because ostensibly, like, this is music that I love. You want to give it to someone and be like, this is music I love. I hope you love it too. Really, what you're saying is, like, this isn't just music that I care about. It's like, I care about you is the subtext there, you know? At least that's how I used my mixtapes, is, you know, romantic aids to various degrees of success.
Well, but, I mean, we're dating ourselves with the mixtape thing and making a mixtape for somebody.
Yeah.
It was a very personal thing. You'd want to do something special for that person.
Yeah. You don't make a mixtape for yourself.
No.
You make it to give to someone else, to connect with someone else.
I've made many for Chuck.
Right, yeah.
Haven't, you big liar.
One of the things that it's out in the world is I wanted the artists that I covered or the people that were connected to those artists, I just wanted them to know that their work had an influence on me to create this new work.
Right.
You know, I would want to know that if I was a musician. If there's someone out there that really, their life has been changed by one of my songs or they've been so moved by one of my songs that they want to do it in their own way, like, it's a big compliment. So
it's the ultimate form of flattery right there.
Exactly.
Okay, who'd you send it to?
We sent it to Phil Collins. So I've been going around every show. I'll play the song and I'll say, you know, if anyone knows how to get this to Phil Collins, just not thinking.
All right,
thinking.
Chuck, we got to edit this. We got to do a little clip.
You're only a degree away from him. We sent it to
Leland.
That's
amazing. Yeah. Well, there was a guy in the audience in Tamworth, New Hampshire. It's a tiny little town up in New Hampshire. And he used to be a music manager and he managed John Martin, who's another English singer-songwriter. Phil Collins is a huge John Martin fan. I think he was even on one of his records. And through a producer friend of his, he sent it to the producer and he said, will you please pass this on to Phil? And the guy did, and Phil wrote back to the guy and they forwarded it on to me, and he's, you know, please tell Mark thanks, you know.
You beat us to it. That's fantastic.
I mean, it was, if he hears about it from two places,
two people,
like, who knows,
boom,
maybe they'll call me to go out on the road with them.
That is really funny.
I couldn't believe, I thought, like, there's no way I'm gonna get in touch with Phil Collins. Like, he wrote back right away, and, you know, it was just a short email, but it was very sweet. And he really appreciated it. And that's all I wanted. You know? I don't want anything else from Phil Collins.
No,
that's amazing.
No.
You know, it's funny thing is, we went to England to talk to Leland, who was on tour with Phil.
That's fun to say.
We saw them at the Royal Albert Hall. And you played there.
Josh Ritter, opening up for Ray LaMontagne. Two nights in a row.
Yeah.
I'm so glad it was two nights, because the first night it's just like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And then the next night you're like, no, this is really happening.
What a beautiful place, too.
It was fantastic. It was one of those experiences that you dream of. I mean, that's one of the iconic world stages, you know, Carnegie Hall, Royal Albert Hall, the Ryman. One of the best experiences I've ever had. It was just awesome.
But that's where we saw Phil Collins that night. And then the next morning we went to Leland Sklar's hotel room. And that's amazing. When we interviewed him. That's when we talked to him.
Wow.
So what we have to do is just circle back, go to the tune called Boys of Summer.
Yeah.
What? And send it to Don.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
We talked to Don already.
That would be amazing, because I don't know how to get in touch with him.
We've talked to him, and he's a very nice man.
That's what I've heard.
We got to send that tune.
We'll give it a shot.
So all we do, you go on this thing, Chuck, at Bandcamp, and you can buy the tune and send as a gift. I've never done that before.
I know how to do that. What am I, an
idiot? I've never done that before.
You never bought anyone a gift?
I can
get you guys. Not on Bandcamp.
I mean, if you're going to pass it on, I can get you guys the music.
No, it's easy to do, and I only spent a dollar, man.
Oh, perfect. Don is a big fan of Jeff Foucault, actually, and has recorded one of Jeff's songs. He's never put it on a record or anything, but yeah, he seems like a really cool guy. And, you know, Boys of Summer, that's one of the more transformed takes of on the song.
It's
of,
mellow. You
know, yeah.
Well, your inflections, too, and back to Against All Odds, too, is that what I like about how you interpret those tunes is that obviously you use some of the key melodies, but you open up a little. You have more of these higher to low inflections of your voice that are very specific to you.
Yeah.
And it's a great signature.
What did you change the signature on that?
Changed the time signature.
No, not. I mean, his signature.
But he did change the time signature.
I changed the time signature. Right. Yeah.
So you have your own signature.
And it was on time. Signature Records.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very confusing. Yeah. You know, I look at songs, I don't like to see them as like sacred texts. You know, I like to see them as things to be interpreted. I mean, well, I guess they could be sacred texts. I mean, the Bible is a sacred text, but there's a lot of different interpretations of the Bible.
That's
so
true.
So, yeah, I guess it's kind of like that. I don't feel like anyone needs me to do a verbatim cover of something that's already been done really well. No. A song like Against All Odds, like, that is firmly ensconced in the 80s. And not to take anything away from it, it was a huge hit. It was more...
But is it the movie?
Yeah, it was more successful than anything I'll ever do. But it is of its time, and it's like, well, what if that song came along now? What would it sound like now?
Yeah,
that's the kind of mission, the sense of mission that I bring to it. And like an Otis Redding song, what would it sound like as like a soul ballad? You know?
Well, it reminds me of something that you said in another interview, that, well, maybe it was the same interview that Ron was talking about. So you take the antenna approach.
To writing songs?
To writing songs. These songs that affected you, these covers that you did.
Well, it's what
you observe.
It's
very defining of what you do, it seems, because you're taking in what you're gathering from your fellow singer-songwriters and the people that you live around, and then also from the songs that you grew up with and that you really loved as a kid or whenever you heard them.
Sure.
That seems to be your vibe.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things that I love to do. Really, you know, what comes out is a function of what you allow in. And if you just want a very little, narrow, defined thing to come out, then don't allow a lot in, and that's how you get that. But I want my music, I love it all. I don't want to limit myself. I try and draw from a wide range of material, just, you know, from what I like. I listen to all kinds of music, and it influences you, you know, and that's not a bad thing or a dirty word. You know, the thing with cover songs is that it helps you realize the constraints that you've been putting on yourself, you know. I have my personal kind of perspective, and I have my experiences to draw on, and I have my limited musical knowledge. I'm not a trained musician, so I have these harmonic and melodic patterns maybe that I've developed and stay within these bounds. And when you go and cover a song, you know, those people have different experiences and different musical knowledge and different ideas, and you get to try those on. And you start to realize, oh man, why don't I try that? I would never think following that chord with that chord. Like, maybe I should try that in a song sometime. Yeah, you know? And so you end up bringing that back to your own material and being able to use that knowledge and those resources to kind of remodel your own kind of house that you're building.
It's a foundation, I think, that you build from when you're a kid with these environmental influences. But I think when you mention antenna, I had this vision too of you just soaking up the things in the atmosphere that you can talk about. And you did mention that, right?
Where,
I mean, I'll go back to the evolutionary biologists. They're all observers.
Right.
You have to do so much observation in science.
Sure. It's really about paying attention. I think that's, you know, I don't remember the specific interview where I was talking about my antenna, but I think it would have been in the context of just trying to pay attention. And you know, that's what you're saying about the scientific observer in me. Like, I really think that's basically my most general job description is like a professional attention payer. You know, like, don't just sleepwalk through your life with all these assumptions about the way things are or the way things have to be. Really notice things, you know?
And well, true, but I think that you're also, when someone doesn't do that or maybe can't do that, a songwriter's job sometime is to, as a gift, relay that back to a listener.
I've certainly gotten that from other musicians, you know, growing up, listening to people like Jackson Browne, you know, kind of gave teenage Mark a whole sense of emotional vocabulary for the things that I didn't know how to describe, you know, and I didn't know other people went through them. You know, when you're young, you think you're a pioneer in every respect. But, you know, listening to Jackson Browne, it was like, oh, he's gone through that before, and this is how he's thought about it. And it helps you. If I could write a song that maybe points out something to someone, that some kind of, you know, treasure in their own backyard or some kind of gold that they already have that they just don't realize, you know, that's, I would love to do that. I hope I can.
When you decided to do this cover album, does that kind of clean the palette a little bit for yourself? When you do something where you take someone else's song and make it your own, does that kind of send you off in another direction? Do you, like, are you already thinking about your next album in that way?
Oh, maybe? Yeah. I it definitely gives you freedom. I've likened it before to, like, you know, covering songs like being a dog and getting to run off leash. There's no expectation there that it needs to sound like anything I've done before. Conversely, I did want these songs to sound like I could have written them. I wanted them to sound like they were an honest expression of my voice. And when I'm singing them, I mean them. I know I didn't write them, but for that 3 or 4 minutes, like, that is my song. I don't see any point in covering a song any other way. One thing that I really wanted to do with this record is, you know, every record of my own, I try to add a new sonic dimension, something that I haven't done before, some approach that I haven't tried. And it may not seem like a sea change or a really, you know, huge thing to casual listener, but for me, it matters. And so for this record, there's the option to use strings. And once we used the strings, I thought, like, I want the record to start out with strings because it's like a shot across the bow. It's like, this is not something you've heard from me before. Maybe what follows will also be new and different than what you're expecting. And kind of prime the listener in that way. Now I just hear strings on everything. They sound so good. I'm like, oh my God, how can I use this on my next record, you know? God.
You got to tour with an orchestra next. That's
yeah. Well, we are going to do, when we do the album release shows, we are going to have string trio in some shows and a string quartet, the people from the record. This will be the first record I've ever toured that I will have for the record release shows, more than one of them. The exact band from the record, both the core band and like some of the accompanists, like the string section. It's intoxicating to me to think that I'm just going to be able to go and do the thing that we did on the record.
Yeah.
And it's going to sound like that live. Because I know there's that thing that like, well, the record and live is different, and you know, you can do different things live. And as a primarily solo, you know, or duo performer, like I'm always doing different things from the record live. For me, the novelty is to get
to do it exactly.
To do it like I did it in the studio. Yeah.
So
you know?
You're gonna cover.
I'm gonna
covers.
Cover myself.
But not yeah. only that,
you're gonna cover yourself doing covers, yeah. which is brilliant.
It's very meta.
It's not like you're bringing in musicians to cover what they heard from the record. These are the actual yes. people who are in the studio with you as you maybe wrote it or arranged it,
right.
and maybe they added their own stuff to it. So that's pretty special.
It is. Because the band on the records, the band on every record, it's not random. It's not just like, oh, they're good, let's hire them. These are people that do things that I love, and increasingly there are people that I know as people first and, yeah. and love as people. I want to surround myself with people like that and let them do the thing that I love that they do. And then you don't really have to really produce anything. You just do, and it is what it is.
And they interpret you. And your style as well.
Yeah,
They put their own signature on it.
You know, Chuck, that's a great point. Like, this time I'm not going to have to say to people when we're rehearsing for the shows, like, there's this part in the piano that's very specific but very important. You know, I can just turn to Sam Kassir, who played on the record, and he'll be like, yeah, I remember that thing that you told me to do. And it's like, I'll do that again. Ah.
Yeah. How often
simple
do you get
pleasures,
that to happen?
Simple pleasures. But yeah.
So you started rehearsals for that?
Not right. yet. This is a very unconventional album release for me.
It's coming out on cassette.
So, yeah. So it came
it
out.
Is, right?
I do have a few copies on cassette.
Yeah. And vinyl.
Yeah, and vinyl. Yeah. I put it out in January. Then I got a call from Josh Ritter to do 2.5 weeks of dates with him. And I realized that, like, if Josh is out working, then none of the people that I use for the record band will be able to do gigs with me because they're all in Josh's band.
Oh, okay.
So I was like, well, I might as well go do these gigs and have fun doing that. So my record release day, I was in Michigan with Laurie McKenna, playing with her, covering Laurie McKenna songs with Laurie McKenna. And then I've got a 2-week break where I'll be rehearsing Josh Ritter stuff, and then I'll be on the road with him for a couple weeks. And then come March, that's when I'll get around to doing my own shows.
Is City Winery the opening one? Or
City Winery is the third.
You're starting in the Boston area?
Starting, yeah, out in Northampton at the Parlor Room, and then up in New Hampshire Seacoast, Exeter, New Hampshire at the Word Barn, and then the last one of that first weekend of shows is at City Winery. I'm really looking forward
this
to it.
This is going
to
be so cool.
Yeah.
How many people in the band?
It'll just be 4-piece. Me, Sam Kassir on keyboards, and Zach on upright, Ray Rizzo on drums. I can't wait.
Well, Mark, thank you very much for sitting with us.
My pleasure, man.
I'm really going to try to make that City Winery.
Here's the thing. It is already sold out.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay.
And that is in large part, because my friend Laurie McKenna is opening for me. I called in a big favor.
Wow.
I was like, Laurie,
that's pretty awesome.
She's been very supportive
that's
of
cool.
me. And she's on the record. I said, would you ever consider just opening a show for me and help me get into a bigger room that may not book me on my own? And she didn't even hesitate. She's like, yeah.
That's so nice. That's awesome. So if you're listening right now, Mark Arelli, March 24th, you won't be going, but it's going to be great. And please.
Well, maybe it'll be so big that they'll give you another date.
That would be great. That's the hope.
Well, thank you. You going to play us a couple songs?
I'd love to.
All right, that'd be great.
Thanks, man.
Now let's do Ophelia here. We'll be right back.
That's awesome. I love that
song. Oh, so good.
What's this other one?
Maybe we'll do Against All Odds.
Yeah.
All
right. This is the mixtape tour, man.
Here we go.
There you go, Phil and Leland.
How can I just let you walk away? Just let you leave without a trace? When I stand here taking every breath with you, you're the only one who really knew me at all. How can you just walk away from me when all I can do is watch you leave? As we've shared the laughter and the pain, we've even shared the tears. You're the only one who really knew me at all. So take a look at me now. There's just an empty space. There's nothing left here to remind me, just the memory of your face. So take a look at me now. Well, there's just an empty space, and you coming back to me is against the odds, and that's what I've got to face. I wish I could just make you turn around. Turn around and see me cry. There's so much I need to say to you. So many reasons why. You're the only one who really knew me at all. So take a look at me. There's just an empty space, and there's nothing left here to remind me, just the memory of your face. So take a look at me now. There's just an empty space, but to wait for you is all I can do, and that's what got to face. Take a good look at me now, as I'll still be standing here, and you coming back to me is against the odds, and that's the chance I've got to take.
You can purchase Mark's music and see where to catch him live if it isn't already sold out at markarelli.com. Go to abovethebasement.com where you can sign up for our newsletter, listen and subscribe to our podcast, like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, and look at all the nice pictures we post on Instagram. We are everywhere. On behalf of Ronnie and myself, thanks for listening. Tell your friends, and remember, Boston music, like its history, is unique. Above the Basement, Boston Music and Conversation is recorded at beautiful Woods Hill Table Restaurant in West Concord, Massachusetts. Woods Hill Table is honored to have been awarded 3 stars as the most sustainable restaurant in Massachusetts by the Sustainable Restaurant Association. The food is organic and locally sourced, non-GMO, and is absolutely delicious. Chef Charlie Foster focuses on seasonal ingredients and their own grass-fed livestock raised on the farm at Woods Hill in Bath, New Hampshire. Go to woodshilltable.com for reservations.